determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being till we ask for them, because we have with us Chris Milligan. And Chris is a book publisher. Chris specializes in publishing books that nobody else will publish. And the reason they won't publish them is because most of our publishing houses are controlled by one of a very, very small number of major corporations. And if you see what's happening to the publishing industry, it's increasingly being centralized in just a few hands. And publishing houses are buying up other publishing houses, and there are fewer and fewer small independent publishers out there. With the major publishers, the CIA has assigned people to those publishing houses, so they will not actually bring the books and really tell you the truth. Well, some years ago, Chris was approached and asked to publish a book by Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Marvin. And this was the story of a military officer with a special forces unit in Vietnam. The book had been, I think, seen by 100 publishers, and nobody would publish it. Nobody would dare to publish it, because it was a fascinating story of a very courageous man and who headed a very courageous team of men who worked on the border with Cambodia, and he was recruited by the CIA to kill Prince Sihanouk, who was the prince of ruling prince of Cambodia. And it's a fascinating story, and we do hope that many of you will want to get the book. But be that as it may, Colonel Marvin's book had quite an impact. In fact, such an impact that the people who control the Special Forces Unit set up the Special Forces Organization for retired people of the Special Forces, got five soldiers to commit perjury. As saying that what was in the book wasn't true. Of course, they would have dropped their suit if they'd just simply withdrawn the book from publication, but Colonel Marvin and certainly Chris Milligan wouldn't do that. And so they went to trial, and eventually they were successful, and of course the jury, after just an hour or two, said that Colonel Marvin had not libeled anybody, that what was in the book was true. But the whole thing was done, of course, to bankrupt Chris and to bankrupt Colonel Marvin. And this is the sort of thing they do with people who tell the truth. Chris, are you there? Chris, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hello.
Okay, fine. Well, is there anything you'd like to add to the story as I told it?
No, sounds really good. It was an amazing experience going to federal district court. You know, and standing up, and they brought in a Medal of Honor winner and all kinds of people, but we prevailed. Justice by the people still does work sometimes.
In other words, the jury found that there was no instance of libel in your case.
Absolutely.
And how could they bring in a Medal of Honor winner? Did he have anything to do, anything at all, about what you were talking about?
Excuse me?
You said they brought in a Medal of Honor winner. How could he comment on what was in the book?
Well, it ended up turning, our lawyers turned him into our witness because he really had no thing.
All right, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Chris Milligan telling you about what happens sometimes to publishers who publish books that tell the truth in America about what's really going on behind the scenes. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Chris Milligan. And so, do you want to tell our listeners a little bit about the trial, about what actually happened?
Well, the interesting was there was actually two trials. The first trial started on Halloween in Charleston, South Carolina. And they called the colonel as a surprise first witness.
Now, this was the colonel who had a Medal of Honor?
No, this was Colonel Marvin.
All right, fine. Okay. Colonel Marvin, for our listeners, is Lieutenant Colonel Dan Marvin, also known as Dangerous Dan, who actually, of course, was a co-defendant in the case along with Chris. So pick up the story there.
Right. So they you know, because, I mean, Dan, you know, was he was a surprise witness, and they called him, and they, you know, tried to make him out to be some crazy old guy is what they wanted to do. And then they really put on their best witness, who I don't think was very good, one of the men who hadn't supplied a tape to Colonel Dan. Because one thing that Dan Marvin did, because, I mean, he was a, you know, he had been a captain in Vietnam and commanded this unit, and he came back, and
basically what he did was he sent copies of the book to all the men who were with him and asked them to send them tapes confirming the fact that what he had written about them was true. Wasn't that right?
Well, he'd sent them a questionnaire, and one of the guys says, well, I don't want to fill out the questionnaire, how about if I send you a tape? And so and then the other guy says, well, hey, that sounds like a good idea. I'll send you a tape, too. So, actually, he didn't ask him to send him tapes first. They volunteered him, and these tapes backed up the whole story. And then later on down the line, for reasons we don't completely know, but they changed their whole story.
Well, at least it's a suggestion that they were put under pressure by the Special Forces organization, or threatened with the withdrawal of their pension. Wasn't that the case, at least?
You know, that's what we've heard, you know, but we can't say for sure. But then to get back to the trial, then the next day, it was really interesting. Their main lawyer left right before the judge, you know, comes in and everything, and then
is the second day of the trial.
The second day of the trial, yeah. He just got up and left and went out the door, and then the judge came in, and then we all sat there for a while waiting for this guy to show up, and these other lawyers over there says, well, we don't know where he is, and one of them was his son, and so they went out and tried to find him.
Hold on, we'll be back here in just a moment with Chris Milligan talking about the trial. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Chris Milligan, who's a book publisher, and he's published a number of books which there are certain people in America who just as soon had never been published. And so they ended up getting sued on this. And of course, the lawsuit was brought by four or five men who'd served in Vietnam with Colonel Marvin, all of whom had read the text of the book, and they'd all agreed with what was said in the book. But pressure was put on them to get up and perjure themselves. At least this was, apparently, this is what I've been told. And so these men, older men now, retired with no other source of income but their military pensions, apparently some of them were told that they would take away their pensions unless they perjured themselves. So the trial starts, and after they have Colonel Marvin on, he does very, very well the first day. On the next day, one of the plaintiff's attorneys, just the lead attorney, doesn't show up. So then what happened?
Well, they look for him, and finally the judge says, well, let's get going anyway. And so then they call me as a surprise first witness for the second day.
Now, in other words, the plaintiff is calling you as a witness. So now you would be a defense witness, but now you're being called by the plaintiff, right?
Right, right. And basically, they want to make me out to be some kook and you know, just some conspiracy weirdo. And, you know, and they try and make a big deal that, well, he publishes books about Skull and Bones. But, you know, the population has had access to the Internet, and Skull and Bones isn't as, you know, strange anymore.
Now, you're talking about the secret society that President Bush and John Kerry and President Bush's father and President Bush's grandfather and so many of the prominent, very wealthy families' sons belong to. So,
and then I brought out the fact that, you know, I mean, and when Colonel Dan was up on the stand and other, you know, there had been a lot of talk about the CIA and different things. And then when I got on the stand, you know, it was brought out that I was a son of a branch chief, you know, of of all of East Asia for research analysis in the CIA. My dad had been in Vietnam in 1956 and was, you know, and I'd done a lot of study about it and different things. So
you brought all this out at the trial.
This was all brought out at the trial.
And of course, one of the reasons they didn't want this book published was because it did talk about the CIA and their involvement in covert operations over there. Isn't that right?
Mm-hmm. And so at the end of that day, actually at the end of lunchtime of that first day, they still couldn't find didn't know where this lead attorney was. So they called lunch and they came back from lunch and the guy says, well, they found this attorney and he had checked himself into the hospital and he had a history of heart problems and maybe, you know, he was having heart trouble.
Well, then why would they cancel the case just because the attorney had heart trouble? He had his son. He had the rest of his legal staff there. It seems to me that they would have proceeded with the case.
Well, it would cost, you know, cost us about $40,000, basically, to, you know, to have to go and do it again. It created a mistrial. And we had to go and do it again, and we come find out the next trial that what he had was he had upper GI gastric something or other, you know, heartburn, you know. So it was basically a very expensive Tums moment, you know. And it was there was a gentleman who an investigative reporter down south who called him up and supposedly had a conversation with him, and he knew that, you know, he could have been back in trial. He was supposedly out of the hospital at 7 a.m., and he could have been there, but he didn't even show up. And so they did it, you know, possibly deliberately to cost us more money because we were already having trouble. You know, our lawyers were saying, hey, you know, the one law firm in South Carolina was saying, hey, you know, we need money. And, you know, so it was good chance that it was some sort of a gambit. But then we went back down in January, finally went through the trial, and the moment of high drama came where these tapes were played, and they had tried to say, well, the men were drunk when they made the tapes. They were just making up stories. They were just regurgitating what Dan had told them. And it was quite obvious right away from listening to these tapes that these tapes were some old war chums talking about the times that they did together. And, you know, we were being sued because in Colonel Dan's book, he writes that we shot into Cambodia in 1966, which was the big crime that Dan said that they had done, and that so that when they went to their local veterans bar, they felt bad when they went in there, so we owed them $100,000 a piece, plus whatever more the jury wanted to add on.
Well, now, of course, the thing is that during the Vietnam War, supposedly we were not shooting into Cambodia, but that really wasn't true. In fact, most of what we were told about Vietnam wasn't true. They simply lied to the American people. They denied we ever had any forces operating in Cambodia. They denied we ever bombed Cambodia. They denied so many things about what happened over there. They simply lied to the American people. And it wasn't that the soldiers over there weren't doing the very best they could any more than the soldiers in Iraq aren't doing the very best they could. It was simply that we were never allowed to win the war in Vietnam. We were never allowed ordinarily to bomb the Ho Chi Minh Trail, or we weren't allowed to bomb the dikes in North Vietnam and stop the war, bomb the hydroelectric plants and stop the war, or bomb the rail yards at Haiphong, or even mine the harbor in Haiphong. We could have stopped the war at any time. I was personally told by William H. Sullivan, the American ambassador to Laos at the time, and by a four-star general, Lewis Wald. Both of them I interviewed, and both of them told me we could have ended the war in 2 months at any time we really wanted to, but we never tried to win the war. So we can't let the American people know that, and we can't let them know that they lied all during the war about not allowing our forces to operate in Cambodia. And Colonel Marvin had permission to operate in Cambodia, didn't he?
Oh, yes, he did. And they're suing, myself and the colonel for this book that says that, and The current Information Please Almanac says that we shot into Cambodia in 1966. You know, General Westmoreland's book says that he got permission to shoot into Cambodia in 1966. And, you know, we had they're called lessons learned. And what they were, parts of the Joint Chiefs of Staff people went through actions that happened in Vietnam and, broke them apart and, tried to learn things from them. And one of the things that they used in that was one of the battles that these people kept saying didn't even happen. I mean, these men went on the stand and said that, they were at a resort camp. And said, we never shot into Cambodia. We never shot into Cambodia. When, we've got pictures of dead bodies, captured weapons. I don't know any resort camps where you've got invading armies. And then we've got their video, their audio tapes where they're saying all the time, well, yeah, we shot into Cambodia. We went into Cambodia and blah, 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 blah. So, I mean, it was just so blatant.
And, of course, then the jury recognized that what Colonel Marvin had written was true and that all of these men were lying. And basically, my understanding is that most of them didn't even dress up to come into trial. A lot of them looked like they were drinking.
It was sad. I mean, it was really sad. You know, it was one thing that our attorneys brought out at the beginning that, this was really sad. And, one thing we told our attorneys beforehand, he says, we really, we aren't mad at these men, I mean, they've been put up to this,
They've been threatened and they've been coerced and, many times, of course, we don't know that they threaten their families, but we know that this is the sort of thing that they'll do. Or anything to humiliate them, you do what you're told to do, or of course we're going to get you.
Yeah, we were told they were threatened. You know, a lot of these people have children that have military careers, and they would mention that their children's military career.
Yeah, in fact, I was reading just this evening. Everybody's heard about Padilla. He was the fellow that they've kept in solitary confinement for 3 years. We're actually going back to right after 9/11 when he was arrested as a terrorist. And he's been the one person, an American citizen, who's been held without trial, no right of habeas corpus. Just this evening, I read in the Wall Street Journal just a little snippet that commented that an intelligence agent had said that they had recruited Padilla to become an informant for the CIA, and when he refused, that's when they charged him with terrorism. So here's a man who was recruited to become an informant for our intelligence agencies, and when he wouldn't go along with it, he's been in solitary confinement for almost 5 years now, because it was shortly after 9/11 when he was arrested. So would they really do things like that? Yes, ladies and gentlemen, they would do things like that. They would send innocent men to prison, as they would Captain Jeff McDonald, the Green Beret captain, sent to prison back in 25 years ago, because it was a satanic murderer who killed his wife and his children. But they had to cover up for this satanic group, and so they sent him to prison. And these things are known. If you haven't read the book, The Deadly Deception goes into the background of how the FBI had sent an innocent man to prison for 30 years to cover up for a murder that had been committed by one of their mafia hitmen that they wanted to keep out of prison, a man who was working with them. Ladies and gentlemen, these things are not nice to think about. But this is the reality we're working with, because I fear that there is terrible, terrible evil in the world today. And, of course, if you'd like to get this little snippet, I'm going to just read this about Padilla today. This man who's been held without habeas corpus. And what was his crime? He wouldn't become an informant for our government. There's a place for informants, but is this the way you treat American citizens who refuse to do what you're told to do? We'll be back in just a moment here with Radio Liberty. Well, Chris, go on with the story.
Well,
go ahead.
I don't know, Colonel. I don't know. It basically, you know, what they did as far as for defense was had their guys go on stand and just repeat these litanies of, you know, it was a resort, we didn't shoot our weapons, blah, blah, blah.
And, of course, isn't it that the jury did not believe them? How long did it take them to come back with a not guilty verdict?
About 2 hours, long enough for them to eat their lunch. They'd already ordered their lunch and then fill out these forms. I mean, it was like a 50-page form, jury form instructions and whatnot they had to fill out because there was different charges, back, you know. And then what they did was they brought in, like I said, they brought in the top JAG guy. He'd been top JAG. He's a Major General Overholt, Hugh Overholt of the Army, retired, and he'd been Chief JAG of the United States.
Now, the Judge Advocate General, JAG is Judge Advocate General. Go ahead.
And he, you know, during this time, the voice says that, you know, that they had violated these standing orders that said that we don't shoot into Cambodia. Well, we'd always ask, we says, can we see these standing orders? And, you know, the chief JAG officer, he couldn't even bring them, and he hadn't even seen them. He says, well, yeah, I called and talked to some people in the Pentagon, and they do have them, but, you know.
But, of course, this was permission that was given off the record to a special forces team that working with the CIA. They were given permission, but, of course, the whole idea of these special operations is that anything that happens, you're on your own, and we'll deny we ever ordered you to do it. Isn't that the way it worked?
Yes, yes. And then they brought in a gentleman who had won a Medal of Honor to say that, Colonel Dan was a quartermaster, and he wouldn't do this. But this guy wasn't even in country in Vietnam when Colonel Dan was doing his thing with the Wa House. And it ended up our attorney got him to talk about, well, you know, there are need to know what's the difference between covert warfare and whatnot. And because the book is titled A Soldier's Journey into Covert Warfare, and he said that, you know, in covert warfare, there is a need to know, and there is plausible deniability. And so they went round and around and about how, you know, well, you know, if he told, he'd have to kill him even. That little joke came out. And so he really didn't end up being a good witness for them because he really had no knowledge at all about the case at all. And they, one thing they had done is they had kept intimating that they were going to call the CIA agent. And the CIA agent, you know, would refute what Dan had said. But, you know, when it came down to it, they never, ever called the CIA agent.
Why didn't your people call the CIA agent?
We could never find him.
I see, okay.
We could never find him. They said that they had found him and they were going to call him and all this stuff, and we couldn't, you know, we could never find him. And it was, and you know, it cost us, you know, almost $150,000.
Just to defend yourself.
Just to defend ourselves.
In other words, they can do that to anybody they want to. In other words, if they target you, they can break you financially because they've got all the money of the world behind them. We'll be right back. Well, Chris Milligan has been telling us about the trial there where he and Colonel Marvin were there. Of course, here you have the people you know, from the Special Forces. Special Forces is financing this whole thing. And, of course, they're, we suspect, getting money from the Central Intelligence Agency who wants to prevent Colonel Marvin's amazing story from getting out. The story that he tells in The Expendable Elite, and we have a number of interviews with Colonel Marvin, and we want to put them into a four-tape set like we did with the Operation Tailwind story, with another story from Vietnam where they'd sent a Special Forces team in into Laos to do a trial with sarin gas and then to kill American deserters. And, of course, they couldn't let this story get out either because it's a violation of international law to use sarin gas, and certainly it's a violation of international law to kill American deserters. So we, of course, have an interview with a man who was there, and then two interviews with April Oliver, who did the story for CNN, and then, of course, pressure was put on CNN to fire her for doing a poor job and And that's an amazing story, but we do have a four-tape set on that. Anyway, Chris, tell us a little bit more about the trial. You were saying that they kept bringing in all of these experts, but none of them knew anything at all about the issues that were covered in the book, did they?
No, not at all. It was just a waste of time. And, you know, the Special Forces Association does publish their annual budget. Their annual budget is only about $140,000, and they just published their most recent budget, and it didn't have any contingencies in there for this latest trial.
Well, then where did the money come from?
Well, that's, you know, one wonders that, you know, because they had seven people. They had, I know Major Overhaul got $2,500 per day, and he was there twice, and, you know, they had more expenses than we do, but they don't show up in their forms, you know.
No, of course, that would you could always, of course, challenge them, but then who are you going to report it to? Central Intelligence Agency or the FBI? They're not going to go into this, because this is the technique they use to silence people who are trying to get the truth out. And it's an amazing story of a group of very courageous men who were doing their duty, believing they were fighting for America as they risked their lives on the Cambodian border in Vietnam in 1966.
Mm-hmm. And to take the SFA back to court, we can't find any lawyers that would do it on contingency, and basically we'd have to raise about another $100,000 to take the special forces, because they were the real people that were pulling the strings behind the whole thing. And then, you know, as you've mentioned before, I mean, the SFA has been acting as a thought police, making sure that, quote-unquote, only what they care to be called the official story is known. And what that does is it you know, us as citizens don't get to know our own history, so that we can't even, you know, try and make things better or, you know, or learn from it, because we don't even know the real history, because, you know, besides what they did to us, and we were the first people that actually got them into court, because always they'd settle with the insurance company, or they'd, you know, do something else, but then they'd just bully the people.
Well, didn't they offer to withdraw the suit if you had pulled the book off the market and say that it was not true?
Well, they wanted us to pay them $15,000, too, you know, and to pull it off and stuff. They've done it to us. They did it to April Oliver in Operation Tailwind. And another thing they've also done it to is Dr. William Pepper and his story of the King assassination. I mean, here we have a gentleman. I met with him in New York, and it was just, you know, we were sitting there, and he told me, he says, you know, I can get on the Today Show anytime I want, as long as I don't talk about my two books about the King assassination.
And of course, for those deals with the fact that Martin Luther King's family took the government to court for their part in the assassination of Martin Luther King. And the jury found that the government was involved, and not a word ever got out in the controlled media. I mean, you would think that if there was a trial and it was brought out that the government was instrumental, government hit teams in killing Martin Luther King, and that James Earl Ray wasn't guilty, had nothing to do with it, he was a patsy, you would think that that would have gotten out, and there's a book written by William Pepper about that. The trial was held, but because of the degree of control over the media, the average American has never heard of it. Was William Pepper a little disillusioned by that?
Absolutely.
Well, Chris, this is what got to me 44 years ago when I got started, was the realization that the media was controlled. I had been to college, I was reading all the newspapers and Time magazine, and I really didn't know anything at all. I had not been educated, I'd been indoctrinated in college, and I was being indoctrinated by the controlled media. And that realization led to me where I am today, 44 years later, reaching out across America, trying to educate the American people about what's really going on behind the scenes. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Chris Milligan. And so, Chris, anyway, it must have been a tremendous relief to both you and Colonel Marvin when the jury came in, and simply after 2 hours, and they were having lunch during part of that time, I said that you were not guilty, that the charges were false. Is that right?
Oh, yes. It was very good. And the bailiff went out and told them that they could, that they could keep their books, because all the jury, they had each had a copy of the book, and then he came back in with the books like they didn't want them, and a big stack of them, but what they wanted was they wanted them all signed.
In other words, they wanted Colonel Marvin to autograph the books he's given them.
Right, right, and so did the judge.
Now, what about the local newspaper? Certainly you didn't get any nationwide coverage because of the censorship we have. Did you get any coverage in the local paper?
We got some coverage in the local paper. We got some, actually there was an AP reporter there, and mostly we got some coverage in the South where there were, Army bases, seemed to be. Two things interesting about the coverage is that, first, the AP guy was never there when any of the tapes played. The local guy was there when the tapes played, but no mention was made of it, of these tapes, these very damning evidence. And then, as I told the colonel, the weekend, the trial went over a weekend. And then on Monday, their lawyers were going to do their closing arguments, and it was going to go to the jury. And I told Colonel Dan over the weekend, I says, well, at the best, I says, those guys have a very slim maybe. But, when they lose, it doesn't make a difference anyway, because they'll just spin it. And sure enough, as soon as the trial was over, they spun it. They said it was a draw. Because we had been told that, well, if you want to get any money, you've got to sue them. And so when we first did responded to the suit, we said, well, gosh, they're calling the book a lie. I guess that's libel too. But we really didn't pursue that in court. So they said that since the jury said that we didn't libel them and they didn't libel us, they said that the whole thing was a draw, but
you didn't sue them for libel, so it wasn't a draw at all. We'll be back in just a moment with Chris Milligan and this incredible story. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Chris was just saying that the media coverage that they did get on the trial was very, very slanted, and of course, the AP reporter who was there didn't come in when they were playing the tapes. The reporter who was there when they were playing the tapes didn't mention them, and that was really the telling point, where these men in their own voices admitted that everything that Colonel Marvin had said was true. But you see, they want to get this book off the market, and they certainly did not want any national publicity about how they'd gone after this heroic Special Forces officer who was simply telling the truth about his experiences, and of course how the CIA had recruited him to kill a world leader. Well, anyway, before we go on, Chris, I want you to get your telephone number and your website out so our listeners can know how to get in touch with you.
Our phone number is 800-556-2012, and the website for the book is www.expendableelite.com. And we do have up there lots of documentation. You can actually listen to all those audio tapes of his men. We've got the transcripts of that first mistrial all completely up there. There's lots of information there. There's also a place where you can donate to our legal defense fund. We still have a bill to pay, and we could all just go bankrupt and just go tell them, well, gee, thanks, guys, but that's not the way we try and walk.
Well, I let me point out to our listeners that Colonel Marvin and Chris have incurred a bill of $150,000. They paid off a little of it. They still owed over $90,000, and neither one of them have any money really behind them. And, of course, this whole thing was simply how the government will bankrupt good people trying to get the truth out. And so Barbara and I have given a fair amount, and I hope many of you out there in the listening audience will seriously consider contributing to the defense fund, whatever you can. And once again, to give that telephone number out, Chris, where
the
people can call.
The number is 800-556-2012. And if I may, let me give our post office box.
Go ahead.
It's Post Office Box 577 in Walterville. Walterville, like the man's name, Walterville, Oregon, 97489. And, you know, really, anything helps, because it does add up, and we really appreciate it, and the Colonel appreciates it. And, you know, one reason that you're hearing from me is because, you know, the Colonel, I mean, it took him a long time just to get it printed. And I remember one letter from Presidio Press. They said, well, you know, we believe the book is all true, but because of the spooky nature of it, you know, they didn't want to publish it.
And because of the spooky, they meant the CIA, because they knew the CIA had come after them.
Right, and I mean, and that's really sad, you know, when, you know, that a publisher, you know, has to worry about, you know, getting sued by our own government for just telling our history. And then also the fact that, I mean, I'm just this guy out here in Walterville who, you know, is publishing books that New York won't publish, which just, I mean, just amazes me. And, you know, stuff like Daniel Hopsicker's work and Peter Lavenda's work and some Jim Marr's. I mean, we have people who are, you know, Book of the Month clubs that their books, you know, New York won't publish their books.
Are you doing Jim Marr's latest book?
Because of the subject matter.
Are you doing Jim Marr's latest book?
We're talking to him about it.
All right, fine. Well, he's a good man, and he's certainly, you know, Harper Collins has published a couple of his books, and they made, you know, they gave him phenomenal amounts of money for those, and then he wrote a book about 911, and rather than publish the book after they'd agreed to and signed the contract and had gone through all the legal loopholes, they just gave him a large sum of money in lieu of publishing the book, because the last thing they want is for the American people to know the truth about what happened on 9-1-1. So they simply paid off Jim Marrs and never published the book. There was HarperCollins. That's how you control thought here in America. There are other ways. You buy up the publisher, you destroy the place of the book, you do what they did to Monica Jensen Stevenson, and her book, Kiss the Boys Goodbye, you simply refused to distribute it, and then, of course, when she got the plates back and went to Canada, it had to be published, somebody bought up the new publisher and shredded 5,000 copies of the book. That's how they control thought in America. And people say, that couldn't go on. And let me tell you, we have example after example after example of how they could effectively control what the American people think. Well, of course, you can help the Colonel and Chris by buying copies of the book. It's called The Expendable Elite, and we'll tell you at the end of the program how to get it. We think it's an excellent book, as we think his other book, Chris's other books, are excellent, and we do carry those, and these people deserve to be supported, because if we don't support our own people who are coming under you know, tremendous pressure for telling the truth, it could be you the next time. And believe me, as Benjamin Franklin had said as they signed the Declaration of Independence, we either hang together or we hang separately. And I think there's a great deal of wisdom to that. We're losing our freedom here in America because there are people, a very dark side of our government. Most of our government employees are wonderful people. But there is an occult force within our movement, within our government, described in the video we carry called The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, that has a different agenda. Well, Chris, you know, now, of course, this is behind you, and if you can get the funds to pay off the money that, of course, is required, are you coming up with some great new books?
Yes, we have a book out, Jaded Task, by Wayne Madsen. He has a website, Wayne Madsen Report.
Now, what's his book about?
His book is subtitled The Blood Politics of George Bush and Company. Some of it is about some of their shenanigans in Africa, how the diamonds get traded by terrorists and turned into money and drugs. And then there's a big several chapters of mysterious deaths that have happened. There's stories about the new mercenaries. You know, we're fighting a lot of this war. You know, we pay our privates, I don't know how much a private gets paid, $1,500 a month, you know, but there's mercenaries over there that are getting paid, you know, obscene amounts.
$10,000-$15,000 a month, right? That Blackstone, Blackwater, well, I've forgotten the name, but anyway, certainly there are we're recruiting mercenary armies, not only for Iraq, but elsewhere. These are professional killers employed by your government.
Right.
And because they have no loyalty to America. They are professional mercenaries. And of course, they are being used over in Iraq. We don't even know what they're being used for. Some people think that some of these atrocities being carried out, that of course are fomenting the civil war, may somehow be tied into some of these professional military, mercenary armies. Nobody knows who they are, and nobody knows who's carrying out many of these atrocities. They're just carried out, and of course the anger, the hatred of the Shia for the Sunni and the Sunni for the Shia Muslim is bringing Iraq out to the verge of civil war. And, of course, if you want an excuse to keep American forces there indefinitely, what better excuse than continued, of course, confusion and chaos there, and, of course, the fact that we are absolutely refusing to effectively train the Iraqi army. In fact, recently in one of the southern provinces, they turned the control of the province over to the local military. And what does the military have? There are pictures in the New York Times recently of these fellows, and they're carrying bolt-action rifles. First World War. This is the Iraqi army that is going to guard this southern province. Why don't we give them adequate weapons? Why don't we give them adequate training? Why don't we give them adequate equipment? Well, if we did that, how could we possibly justify staying there indefinitely? So, anyway, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. If you have a question for Chris, certainly about their experience with the trial, or about some of the material that Chris has, he has some excellent, excellent books, and we can talk about those. But our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you would like to ask Chris about the trial that was totally blacked out by the controlled media, because the last thing they wanted the American people to understand is how they're able so effectively to control what the American people think. Well, Chris, you did a great job with that book on Daniel Hofsiger, that book on Barry and the Boys. Would you like to tell the listeners just a little bit about that book?
Well, Barry and the Boys is a story of Barry Seal, and Barry Seal was just a kid who loved to fly. He started flying when he was 15 years old and was one of the best pilots ever. He was one of the youngest pilots for Eastern Airlines. And he started working with the CIA because they like good pilots when he was in high school. He started flying arms to Castro. Then he flew in Bay of Pigs.
I mean, he was flying military weapons to supply Fidel Castro, is what you're saying.
Yes.
And, of course, what our listeners don't understand is that we armed Fidel Castro. As you've heard me say many times before, the American government brought Fidel Castro to power, knowing full well he was a communist, the best enemy money could buy. Pick the story up there.
And then he also was involved in the Bay of Pigs. Then he was involved in a lot of gun running and explosives running. He was involved in the parts of the Kennedy assassination. He was a part of Operation 40.
And he was always involved working undercover for the CIA. Do you know what he did as far as the Kennedy assassination was concerned? Because that was a CIA operation.
Well, there is, evidence that supports that he possibly was a pilot that was going to pilot some of the people that were involved away out of it.
But we don't know that for certain.
We don't know for certain. We have some circumstantial evidence that points to it. He himself says that he did.
Now, what about his wife? Have you talked to her at all?
I haven't. Daniel spent a lot of time with her. And then, see, Daniel happens... His birthday is the same day as Barry Seal. And see, one thing Barry was doing, Barry was gathering a whole bunch of information together to talk because he was getting tired of the positions that he was being put in. Because, you know, he was a drug runner, you know, unofficially for the government and these guys.
For the CIA. And, of course, he was working with one of the chief officers of the CIA, a man named, wasn't it George Herbert Walker Bush?
Yes. There's a great point in the book and also in one of Daniel's videos where Barry's attorney is talking and he says, well... Barry, what's going on? And Barry tells him, well, you want to know what's going on? You go call this number and tell him you're me. So the guy calls the number, and it gets answered, Office of the Vice President, and this is when George H.W. was the Vice President. He gets handed off to some admiral. And when he died, he had George Bush's, Barry Seal died, he had George Bush's personal phone number in his wallet.
You mean when they killed Barry Seal?
Right.
He was gunned down as a professional head of some sort.
Yes. And according to the people that hit him and their lawyer, those people were working for Ollie North.
That actually, were they captured and were they convicted? What happened to the murderers?
Yes. Some of them were.
And were they ever executed or are they... what sort of a term did they get?
That I do not know. I do know that they did go to trial. I don't know if they were... it was in Louisiana. I don't know. We should... that would be interesting to find out.
But okay.
Barry's book... that book was attacked mercilessly. It's been kept out of bookstores for 5 years. It finally is going to start showing up in bookstores, hopefully... the first part of next year.
And the book is called Barry and the Boys, and of course on the front cover is a picture of a number of young CIA agents. This is a picture taken many years ago.
Yes,
and there's Barry Seal, a number of the CIA agents, and another young man at the time. His name was Peter Goss. Porter Goss, later to be in the CIA, later to be the congressman in charge of intelligence, overseeing intelligence, later then become the director of the Central Intelligence Agency until recently. So it's amazing these people give incest a bad name.
Yeah, and Porter Goss joined the CIA in 1959 when he was still at Yale and also a member of a sacred society there called the Order of Book and Snake, which sits right up the street from the Skull and Bones Temple, also known as the Tomb. And Book and Snake is an amazing building. It's about three stories tall, completely white, no windows at all, big black door in front, some columns, and it's completely surrounded by a fence that the posts are made of intertwined serpents. It's right across from a big graveyard, too.
All right, fine. Well, anyway, of course, so Barry and the Boys is a story. Barry Seal, an operator for the CIA involved in drug smuggling. That's the hardest thing, though, for the American people to accept. After all, we have a war on drugs. We're trying to stop drugs. We're trying to save people's lives, but nobody ever stops and asks, if we're really involved in a war on drugs and we control Afghanistan today and our troops and our helicopters and our planes are there, why do they have the biggest opium crop this year of all time? If we control the country, you mean we control the country and we can't even do anything about the fields filled with opium poppies? Come on now. We could stop it, the traffic tomorrow. They just don't want to.
And guess what, Dr. Stan? They're even lying to us. It's really funny. If you go and look at the official figures of production, and then you look at the official figures on consumption, you come to realize that the consumption is a lot more than what they're owning up to that is being produced in the world. The United States, according to the UN figure, has 0.6, which is about 1.8 million opiate users. And the largest amount of opiate users on the planet in percentage of population is Iran.
Right.
2.8, and Iran, again, is a big opium producer.
Well, just before, we're about ready to run out of time here, but your dad was at the CIA. And didn't he tell you that he dropped out of the CIA because he didn't want anything to do with their drug smuggling, in the Far East?
He told me, Dre, he says, he looked at me, the first thing he said, the Vietnam War is about drugs. There's these secret societies behind it. And then he said, and communism is all a big sham. These same secret societies are behind it all. It's all a big game. And I thought my daddy was nuts.
Well, you found out your dad's a lot smarter than you thought, didn't you?
I was a teenager then, you know.
I know. Well, it's awfully hard to realize, of course, that these things really do go on. They're not imaginary. We're involved in a spiritual battle against very dark and sinister forces. Our guest has been Chris Milligan here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Chris Milligan. Chris, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, I want to thank you, Dr. Stan, for having me on. And if I could say anything, you know, I want to thank everybody that, you know, I've met doing this and everybody that's helped us. And I hate to sound like a broken record, but, you know, any help that people can give us, we really need it because, you know...
Well, let's get your telephone number one more time, Chris.
Our phone number is 800-556-2012. The website for Expendable Elite is expendableelite.com. Our address is Post Office Box 577, Walterville, Oregon, 97489. And God bless everybody, and God bless you, Dr. Stan.
Well, thanks so much, Chris, and I really want you to know how much I appreciate what you've done and your dedication to getting the information out. Chris publishes books like The Fleshing Out of Skull and Bones. He's actually putting out Professor Sutton's. Are you publishing Professor Sutton's America's The Secret Establishment
yes,
now?
Yes.
And, of course, he befriended Professor Sutton, Anthony Sutton, before he passed away. And do you have any of his papers or any of his records?
Yes, we have all of his papers. And, he was a great man. I mean, he helped me understand a lot of, you know, stuff that my father told me. I mean, he was a sweet guy. He was cantankerous. And, you know, we're awfully lucky he started to talk and write the books that he did because he really helped a lot of people to understand, the situation that we're in, and then they write, and then, you know, and it just goes on, and, you know, we all help. I mean, you're one of the hardest working guys out there, Dr. Stan. I mean, how many hours of radio do you do each day?
Well, we do an awful lot, that's for sure. But we think of what a privilege it is to be able to talk to people across America and try to get them to learn what we have learned. And as I said this afternoon, there was an old poem about, upon one man's life it has fallen, a light that doth not depart, and a look or a word he hath spoken wrought a flame in another man's heart. And that's how I got started, and a flame was lit in my heart. And, of course, I hope I can do that in the hearts of many of the people who listen to these programs and teach them so that they can teach others. If there's any hope of preserving any semblance of Christian civilization, it's going to be with an understanding that we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. Chris Milligan, God bless you. Thanks so very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Good night, and God bless you.
God bless.
Well, this is Dr. Stan and Chris Milligan and Daniel Marvin are very, very brave people. Their telephone number, if you'd like to help, 800-556-2020. That's 800-556-2020. And Barbara and I have certainly contributed we feel that I hope many of you out there will contribute as well. And, of course, if you'd like to go to the website, ExpendableElite.com. That's ExpendableElite.com to learn about this very courageous man, Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Marvin. Special Forces served his country bravely, as did all the men fighting in Vietnam, as did the young men fighting in Iraq today. Not realizing, of course, they're being betrayed by powerful forces at the highest levels of our government, who have a different agenda. They didn't intend to win in Vietnam. They do not intend to win in Iraq today. If they did, they would be, of course, equipping the Iraqi army to take over, and they're not equipping them or supplying them or doing any of the things so that the Iraqi army can take over and Americans can come home. That's how they're going to justify staying on forever in the Middle East. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we carry the Expendable Elite, Colonel Marvin's book. We hope you'll want to get that. We carry Chris's other books. Barry and the Boys, the story of Barry Seal, who, of course, worked for the CIA and ended up, of course, being assassinated by the Central Intelligence Agency. And then, of course, we carry The Fleshing of Skull and Bones, and we actually carry several other books that he has. There's one about the murder of Commander Spitzer that we carry with no smoking gun, I think is the title of it. Anyway, they're all available from Radio Liberty, along with many other things that we hope you'll want to get. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is RadioLiberty.com, and if you go there, you can listen to us directly or indirectly 5 hours a day on the Internet, and we're on the shortwave 4 hours a day on Telstar 5, 9 hours a day. And so you can certainly listen. We hope, though, that you get other people to listen. And they may start out thinking we're crazy. Before long, they may be afraid we're not. We have to educate the American people, and you have to help us. If you'd like to get a free copy of our latest newsletter, we'd be glad to send you one. I suggest perhaps our May newsletter, which really gives you the background of the immigration invasion and the significance of the logo of the Trilateral Commission. The significance of the logo of the Trilateral Commission. We do hope that you want to get this information from us. Of course, we also hope many of you out there will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters and helping us financially, quite frankly. We are almost completely listener-supported. Oh, we do carry a few things like the Berkey water filters and the Miracle 2 soap and the Sanjian shortwave radios. And then, of course, we carry the Robinson homeschool curriculum, but primarily we carry books and videos and audio tapes, and we hope many of you get those, and certainly it does help us if you'd like to understand what's happening financially. I got a great DVD or VHS called The Financial Tsunami, and you can get that with or without the syllabus. If you want to understand Iraq and all of the contrived wars of the last century, why, of course, that's Iraq, The Untold Story, a VHS, with or without the syllabus. If you want to understand how they're poisoning our children with water fluoridation, why, you'll certainly want to get our talk, Hidden Agenda. It's available on the video. And, of course, there's a syllabus that goes with that. We'll actually see the scientific studies. It explains it's all about fertility control. It's all about poisoning the reproductive systems, about lowering the intelligence, about sedating the people, disrupting the endocrine system, softening the bones. They know all these things are done by fluoridated water. Why would they do it? Because there's an intense hatred of people, and because, of course, ill people will not resist the coming dictatorship. Could anything be this evil? And I would like to suggest it is. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And we'll be back in just a moment for the next hour of Radio Liberty. Dr. Stan Peck here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls unless we ask for them. We have on the line Barry Shammas, who is, of course, an Israeli citizen who's very, very concerned about what's happening to his country. Barry Shammas has been studying what's going on for a long period of time. And many years ago, he actually analyzed the assassination, the strange assassination of Premier Rabin, Itzhak Rabin of Israel, who was supposedly assassinated when somebody came up behind him and shot him in the back. The only trouble was that all the bullet wounds entered from the front. And, of course, it was very much like the assassination of Bobby Kennedy, where Saran Saran was standing in the front, but all of the bullet wounds entered from behind. So Barry, of course, put together some movies and documentation and really was able to convince the people in Israel and, of course, the United States, but primarily the people of Israel, which is his homeland, that the murder of Rabin was not at all as it had been told. The man in prison was not the man who had killed him. There was an intelligence operation. It was a coup d'etat, and you really had pretty good luck getting the people of Israel understanding what had happened, didn't you, Barry?
Very important.
Hey,
hello?
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just talking to people with me. Hi, Dr. Stan.
Well, anyway, you really convinced a lot of the people over in Israel that, that they hadn't got the truth.
It was one of the front, two in the back. Our government told us there were two bullets in the back. I proved there was one from the front. This year, a documentary aired on Channel 2 in Israel found the third bullet, and I was vindicated.
All right, fine. So, but were there some bullet holes in the back? Or?
There were two in the back. One in the front.
There was not
supposed to be one in the front. Let's put it this way. The government had everything wrong. The range was wrong. The government claimed it was 50 centimeters. In fact, it was zero. He was shot point blank. The number was wrong. Three is not the same as two. And, of course, the placement, one in the front, was not in the government report. In other words, it was an entirely different murder. We caught them. Our government murdered Yitzhak Rabin, and then with a little snooping, well, what do you know, it turns out that Shimon Peres ordered the assassination through the head of the Shabak and the bodyguard, Yoram Rubin. That was how Yitzhak Rabin was murdered. That's how it was done. Shimon Peres murdered him. Just as he's murdering the Israeli people today, that's what is going on. This war has been in the planning for at least the day that Oslo was signed. This war was in the planning.
The war you're talking about that's going on today with Lebanon and of course, with Hezbollah and with Hamas, and probably even indirectly with Iran, would you say?
Well, look, Iran isn't taking the bait. They have been baiting Iran and Syria since this fighting began 7 days ago. They have been baiting them in every respect to come in and openly join the fighting. They want Syria to attack Israel. That's part of the plan. Syria is not buying into this. Now, if you watch this war the way it's supposed to be fought...
We're going to have to hold on there for a minute. We're going to have to go to a quick break here, and then we'll be right back with Barry Shammas. Barry, of course, came to America after a serious automobile accident under very serious or suspicious circumstances. He really came to America because he felt his life in Israel was threatened. But he's an excellent commentator on what's going on. I hope you'll heed what he has to say. All right, Barry, go ahead and pick up this story. You're saying that they really want both Iran and Syria to attack Israel, but neither one of them will do it. Is that right?
That's what's happening. They have been, every single incident that takes place against Israel, every major incident, it's a Syrian rocket or it's an Iranian rocket. And by the way, it's probably true. They are, probably are Syrian and Iranian rockets. I'm not arguing with that. I'm arguing with the fact that it was supposed to be Syrian and Iranian rockets. Now, I'm going to give you the example of the security chief of the Israel Defense Forces, Colonel Giora Ilan. Giora Ilan investigated the kidnapping of Corporal Shalit. And what did he discover? He discovered that Corporal Shalit was surveilled. Believe it or not, the kidnapping was actually captured on video camera and watched by the Israeli Defense Forces. A tank commander wanted to shoot at the Hamas kidnappers. He was rejected. He wasn't allowed to do so. Forces were not sent into Gaza at the other end of the tunnel to catch the kidnappers. This was a deliberate Israeli kidnapping. This is what it happened. The series of unfortunate screw-ups is not possible.
In other words, what you're saying is the screw-ups are not screw-ups. This is exactly what they wanted. They wanted to get these men kidnapped so they could justify going to war. Would that be it?
Oh, my goodness, yes. Now, don't forget something. If we hadn't... Now, here's one of the big ones. I spent the last 2 years trying to prevent the removal of the very brave and decent and productive Israeli farmers in Gush Katif, which is the Gaza Strip. Now, I said over and over again, if anyone really wanted peace with whoever lives in the Gaza Strip, and I'm very reluctant to use the word Palestinians, nonetheless, the answer is not the removal of a few Jews from, what was it, 10,000 acres? Nah, it was less than that. It was really, by American standards, it wasn't even a decent ranch they were living on. Now, if you want a Palestinian state, it has to be in the Sinai Peninsula. That's empty. And that's 36,000 square miles. That's where it should have been. There should have been, if there was an intention to have peace. Okay, we have to assume that there is no intention to have peace. But if there was, it would have been a negotiation with Egypt to give enough of the Sinai Peninsula away.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with Barry Shamish as we discuss what's going on in Israel today. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Barry Shamish, and it is Barry's contention that the initial kidnapping of the corporal and of the Israeli corporal was orchestrated in part by the Israeli Defense Force. They would not allow the local military to go after him. They were catching the whole thing on video. A camera, apparently, was whisked away through a tunnel. They could have gone to the other end of the tunnel and apprehended the kidnappers. They did not, because they wanted a justification for this war. Now, this would be true with both the one soldier kidnapped in the south, the two kidnapped in the north, and of course the president of Israel today is saying, well, the attack will not, of course, end until they return the three Israeli soldiers that they kidnapped. In the process of trying to save these three Israeli soldiers, I don't know how many Israelis have been killed and how many Lebanese civilians have been killed. I don't know how many Hamas soldiers have been killed, but an awful lot of people are dying, and they've died in the last week, and a lot more are going to die because this has nothing to do with those soldiers. They are simply the excuse that is being used to justify this war. Would that be a fair statement?
Oh, yes. Look, this is the New World Order's takeover of the Middle East. This has been in the planning from well before the signing of the Oslo Accords, which brought the PLO back to Israel, and there was no reason for that, believe me. It was insanity to bring your worst enemy and put him in your backyard. But all of this, and I've been saying it over and over again, all of it was a war process. There was never a peace process. The word peace is meaningless. Now, until, and by the way, the Israeli citizens who back the peace process are still, when this war ends, they'll go back and do it again. There's something in their minds that, well, let's put it this way. Jews just don't want to survive, you know? When the New World Order says that Israel will be used to create a bloc, the new Middle Eastern bloc, that requires some leap of faith that the Jewish people don't have. They cannot understand that Israel was created to do bad things. This is not something they can understand. As far as they're concerned, Israel was created to protect them from anti-Semites. Well, I got news for you. An awful lot of the anti-Semitism that Israel was created to prevent Jews against was, in fact, created by the labor Zionists. They were actually trying to get Jews to Israel the wrong way and for the wrong reasons. This war is the same thing. They're going to put every Jew in Israel at risk for his life. And that's what they are going to do. It may not have happened yet. Now you've got about 2 million Israelis going to sleep every night afraid a rocket is going to go through the bedroom window.
Well, no,
and that's bad enough.
Barry, what do you anticipate happening? And nobody can really tell for certain. Do you anticipate the United Nations is going to send in troops? Do you think that this war is going to continue until Israel sends in the ground troops into Lebanon in order to take out the Hezbollah rockets and destroy Hezbollah so that certainly they can get a legitimate government in charge of Lebanon? What do you think is going to happen?
Oh, please. Nobody's trying to get a legitimate government in charge of Lebanon. What they're trying to do, again, right after the first signing of the Oslo Declaration of Principles, in December of 1993, I interviewed Ron Tundak. Ron Tundak was one of the two negotiators of the Oslo Accord, and he told me that the final goal of Oslo was Israel without borders. And I said to him, what does that mean? Who knew what that meant in 93? I said, what does Israel without borders mean? If Israel doesn't have borders, you don't have a country. And he said, exactly. When the Oslo Accord my boss, by the way, he says, Yossi Beilin is his boss. He doesn't believe in borders. Borders cause wars. If we get rid of all the borders, there won't be any wars in the Middle East anymore. That's what they're trying to do. They're trying to create a Middle Eastern bloc, with Israel no different than Iran. We're all one big happy family inside this bloc. That's the ultimate goal of this war, if you can believe it. It's the first stage. Now, what does that mean? That means that Iran has to be attacked. What are these, you're talking ground troops? Are you joking? If we were going to take out the rockets, we would have used ground troops. I was in the 82 war. I was within one day of the Beirut-Damascus highway. If you want to take out the rockets, there is only one way. You have to send in your army. Air attack with your air force and artillery is not going to knock out the rockets. Well, that's one great way to attack Iraq, isn't it? You're all bogged down in Iraq. You don't have the ground troops to attack a nation of 60 million people, but you've got one great air force. Israel is testing out the viability and the feasibility of knocking out a country with its air force. And I got news for you. I don't think it's working.
All right.
Arabs are quite prepared to die. There's a phenomenon amongst them that hasn't been recognized, I suppose. Israel will not send in ground troops. That is my firm belief. That would require actually taking out the rockets and ending the war. I don't believe that's the goal of this war at all. The goal of this war is to include the entire Middle East. And the end goal is that these troops, and they will be American troops, and they will be British troops, I don't think they're going to be United Nations. They will be New World Order troops from the United States and Britain, the Anglo-Saxon arm of the New World Order. That's who I believe will eventually be patrolling the entire Middle East. And I think that's the goal. Now note, when George Bush and Blair were supposedly caught off guard, I don't know if that was off guard or not, but nonetheless, what they said is we have got to get the Syrians to understand that their position, we've got to blame the Syrians, and we've got to bring in international troops. Well, that, I think, was their strategy from the beginning. Blame the Syrians and bring in the international troops, and get yourself a bloc like the EU or like NAFTA in the Middle East without an Israel and without an Iran, just one giant happy family. That's what I think the goal of this war is. And by the way, I think the Arabs know it too, because they're not biting the way they're supposed to bite.
All right, Chris, we do have the NATO army, and of course that's operating in Afghanistan, and that would be an ideal. This is really a United Nations army. NATO army has become a United Nations army. They haven't told the American people that. I mean, why do we still have a NATO? They were organized to defend Europe from the wicked Russians, and now that the Russians are no longer wicked, they're our friends. So we're sending the NATO army to Afghanistan. But it was really a United Nations army, and I think that this is my contention, and we'll have to wait and see. But it's my guess that this is the army that's going to be sent into the Middle East to bring peace. Would you? Is that a possibility?
Well, let's just say that for the time being, anyways, it's the United States and Britain. It's the forces fighting in Iraq who really control the ship. You may be right, but as I said, the world is run by two main forces. And one is the Anglo-Saxons, London, Washington, New York, the CFR, of course. That's one gang. The other gang is the Vatican, Catholic Europe, the Bilderbergers. And quite frankly, they've been left out. And I think Bush is quite capable of leaving them out. And I think Blair is quite capable of leaving them out if there's some glory to be had. Right now, these Arabs are really fighting the New World Order. Nobody is analyzing it that way. This is when I watch TV and I watch, oh my God, the CFRs, Henry Kissinger with Big Neil Brzezinski debating the war. We know this is a CFR war. It's not a Bilderberg war. It's a war started by the CFR and began with their process called the Oslo Accord. This war explains why there was an Oslo Accord. It didn't make sense to bring your worst enemy to your backyard. It made no sense whatsoever. And I got news for you. Hamas, I don't know if they won the elections. I really suspect they didn't. But Israel, the Israeli government, did everything in its power to make sure they won. That is for sure. Now, let's look at Lebanon and the two tanks. They were two lone tanks. They were part of a tank convoy. But there was some shooting up at Mount Baron, not too far away, and the rest of the convoy left these two tanks by themselves. They were taken, they were ambushed and taken away, the two soldiers. The rest of the convoy was away from the convoy. They were in Mount Baron, about 12 miles away. In other words, this was also another setup. Now don't get me wrong, the Hamas and the Hezbollah are good guys. They're no more good guys than the Nazis were good guys. But still, in all, they were tricked into doing something outrageous and stupid and starting this war. Now, how that's done, again, I don't have a camera on the wall. They may have infiltrators. I'm not sure how you convince them to do an idiotic thing like kidnap those soldiers. But don't you think Hamas is smart enough to know that Israel would react to a double kidnapping? They must have known this war was going to start, or else they wouldn't have kidnapped those soldiers.
Yeah, well, I think you're absolutely right. As I see so many things unfolding, and as you study history, you almost have a feeling that somebody's orchestrating everything, that there's a master hand that is doing all of these things. And of course, you see this. In fact, I was listening to reading the Israeli presidents or premiers a speech to the Knesset, you know, justifying this war.
Almost the prime minister.
Yeah, it reminded me so much of the speech that was given by Sir Edward Grey in 1914 to the British Parliament about honor and how England had to get into this war in Europe. And of course, the British people didn't want to get into the war. The Parliament didn't want to get into the war, but Sir Edward Grey talked about these ideas of honor, and if they didn't do what was right, nobody would ever respect Great Britain again. And he got England into a war that bankrupted the country and killed 21 million people and wounded twice that many. And as I hear, read what Olmert is saying, you know, I have the feeling that we may be seeing the same thing all over again.
Olmert's speech was dreadful. Now, once again,
hold that thought. Hold that thought, Barry. We'll be back in just a moment.
Okay.
All right, Barry, go ahead and pick up the story.
Well, first of all, don't forget my phone number. I don't know how much good this is doing, but I am getting the occasional lecture. And by the way, I'll have to go back to Israel if I don't see some work. I give three lectures, one on the Rabin assassination, that's the one people like, but also this secret war, I have a fine lecture. My number is 918-482-2333, 918-482-2333, and my email is chamish, C-H-A-M-I-S-H, at netvision, one word, N-E-T-V-I-S-I-O-N, .net, N-E-T.il, chamish at netvision.net.il, and boy, I want to tell you that today our email collapsed, the home I'm in, land email, satellite email, everything collapsed today. And boy, do I have suspicions that this little interview is being listened to by more people than you can imagine.
Well, I hope that there are a lot of good people listening to it as well as bad ones. But anyway, did your children get out safely today?
I haven't heard of an airplane crash, so I'm going to say yes.
All right, fine. So they were to take off this afternoon
My ex-wife took my little nephew. The whole family, as much as we could get rid of, are out of Israel right now. Now, I want to talk about Olmert's dopey speech.
All right,
do you really believe he has a picture of the three soldiers in his office? That's how he started his speech. They used every crappy cliche in the book. It was him ending up taking a yarmulke out of his pocket, putting it on his head, and reading from the book of Jeremiah. My God, what a schlocky, awful speech. You call that speech writing?
Well, I think that it was intended to provoke an emotional response from the listeners to justify continuing the war.
If anger is an emotional response, it worked like a charm on me. Look, there is no question whatsoever that Ehud Olmert, with no military experience whatsoever, is leading his country into disaster. Just disaster. And I got news for you. One Hezbollah, more or less, isn't the issue. Another one will replace it. They've set up the Hamas in Gaza, and again, if you want a Palestinian state and you don't get it out by throwing the most productive people in Gaza, the farmers of Gush Katif, you do it by getting maybe 10,000 square miles of land in the Sinai Peninsula, which Egypt now controls, but the British used to control it. They got it from Turkey in 1906. It is an Egyptian territory. There's only 50,000 residents in the whole place. That could be a Palestinian state if anyone wanted it. But now you have to have the Palestinians attacking Ashkelon. That's so much more productive than actually building a real state with real land. Believe me, nobody but nobody is interested in peace. Nobody.
And that is a great tragedy, you know, because, of course, you know, unless there's peace, why, if it will continue to be certainly conflict, perpetual conflict there. And I really think that really is part of what this is all about. You want perpetual, what was it, perpetual war for perpetual peace. Somebody wrote a book like by that name. And I think it's all going to end up with a one world order and, of course,
that's the
new world religion.
But Israel, once again, this is World War II. In World War II, you had many nations fight. You had 60 million dead. But only one people, the Jews, were chosen to be wiped off the map. Once again, you've got the Jews at the forefront. And let me tell you, we are chosen to be wiped off the map all over again.
But don't you think there are certain people within Israel who are pushing that as much as the Arabs?
Yeah, Olmert, Shimon Peres.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here with Barry Shemesh. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Barry Shemesh. And Barry is a Jewish patriot who's been certainly studying what's going on in his country and recognizes the fact that there are people within his government who have no loyalty to Israel. And their loyalty is to this internationalist dream. They're agents of the globalists, and, of course, that ties into the CFR, trilateral group here in the United States. And of course, the end result of everything that's going on is not going to be the enlargement of the State of Israel. It is going to be the destruction of the State of Israel, which to the average individual doesn't make sense. But if you stop and see what's happened since the Oslo Accord, the Jews have given up almost 95% of the land that they had. And boy, I keep telling the anti-Semites who call me, if the Zionists are in charge in Washington, D.C., they're not doing a very good job. So, there is another group of people who are in charge, and they have a different agenda. And I believe it's going to bring terrible tragedy to the Jews in Israel and, of course, to the people of the Middle East. So you pick up the story, Barry.
Well, yeah, I had an amazing interview in Salt Lake City. I gave a speech there not 2 days ago. I met the grandson of Evelyn Rothschild, and his name was Michael, and I want you to know that he did not talk to me very long. It's a very dangerous thing for in his position to talk. But I said to him, why do the Rothschilds want Israel destroyed? And he said, they don't want Israel destroyed. Israel's their toy. They're not going to destroy Israel. It's too useful. And I said, useful to who? And he said, the seven families. There are seven financial families that are playing with everything, and they are, in fact, running this war for their own pleasure and for their own money, and they're not going to give up on Israel. And I said to him, well, then, could you please explain why Israel's territory, its land, has been reduced once it contained the entire Sinai, and, we've lost at least 45,000 square miles, and now we're down to 9,000 square miles. I said, you think that is really preserving a nation? And he says, don't worry. It was done with a purpose. Israel's not going away. And then it occurred to me, they may actually preserve this country just because it's just a fantastic source of money. And that's it. It's a source of control, and it's a source of money. And it occurred to me at that point that this war is the New World Order's real war in the Middle East. This is why there was an Oslo Accord. I've been looking for the war that came from Oslo, and this is the war that came from Oslo. This is it. It opened up the world for me talking to this guy.
And, of course, we tried to get him to come onto our program. We'll just call him Michael, but he really is afraid for his life to come on, knowing he's one of these people who knows too much. But he would not appear. And,
did he actually tell you that?
Yes, I was told that.
Okay.
So there really is this gentleman, and he is related to the people who work with the Rothschild family. But the Rothschilds are only one of a number of families. The work behind the scenes, of course, have phenomenal wealth, and of course their real dedication, in my estimation, is to the New World Order and the New World Religion, because I do not believe that these people are Jewish. I believe that they are Satanists. You want to just develop a little of this idea, because there are these other forces out there that most people have no idea of.
I wrote a book. It seemed fantastic to a lot of people. Maybe it's now a little less fantastic. It's called Shabtai Tzvi, Labor Zionism, and the Holocaust. What I claimed was that there are a group of Jews, or at least they were Jews. Many, many have converted. And we'll talk about the CFR and how many members of the CFR discovered they're Jews when they run for office. These are people who convert to other religions because Shabtai Tzvi, the false messiah of the Jews of the 17th century, converted to Islam when the Turkish Sultan threatened to kill him. And his followers, they were a small group, most abandoned him, but his followers believed that was the role of Sabbateanism, to convert to other religions, practice Sabbateanism in secret, and become the fifth line of the world, become the despised and the provocateurs of the world.
And of course,
that is called Sabbateanism.
And of course, if you look up in my Encyclopedia Americana, as I did when I first heard of the Sabbateans, I said, how could that be some organization I'd never heard of? And I looked it up, and the Sabbateans, just as Barry says, in the 1600s, by Sabbati, converted to the Muslim faith and took many Jews with him. And they're a sect within Judaism that has an entirely different worldview, and they're very, very powerful, aren't they?
Apparently. And I'll tell you one thing. They hate Jews. They despise Judaism. And as for the CFR, John Kerry runs for president. Suddenly, they discover his father was a Jew. Who doesn't know what their father is?
That's not like Madeleine Albright. Gee, I never knew I was Jewish.
But Madeleine Albright forgets that she was raised by her Jewish relative. It's absurd. Wesley Clark discovers his father was Jewish when he's smashing Bosnia. How can you have so many people forget that they're Jews until they run for power, and then they discover it?
Hold that, we'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Barry Ashamis, and we're talking about the Sabbatean, and this is the most amazing story. It's a group that, well, it's one of many groups that I see out there that all tie together into what I call the Brotherhood of Darkness. But if I ever rewrite my book, I'm going to have a section there on the Sabbateans, because they really are real. These are people who claim to be Jewish, but they're not Jewish at all. And, of course, they are very, very small, a clique of people who have a different agenda, and they certainly promote anti-Semitism at every step of the way. So pick
and
up
they
the story.
Could not care less if Israel loses this war. This is what people can't understand. Shimon Peres would be delighted if Israel lost the war. What does he care? He is, again, he has no affection for Judaism. None. He despises Judaism. This is not understood, that the leaders of Israel could not care less if Israel goes.
And, of course, this is so far foreign to our own people here. They can't believe that both the Labour and the Conservative Party over there are controlled by the same people, and they tie into the CFR clique here in America that controls both the Republican and the Democratic Party. Would that be a fair estimate?
Well, it's true now. They destroyed the good Zionism. There was a patriotic Zionism that tried to prevent the Holocaust. My Zionism. And in that case, it was led by Jabotinsky in the 30s, and Begin and Shamir. These people were trying, and of course, by the way, the history books portray them as fascists. I mean, you read a history book about them, and you will find out they're all a bunch of fascists. They were not. They were patriots. That's the fact of the matter. They tried to prevent the Holocaust, and in America, what they ran into, the American Jewish establishment destroyed these people. They let the Jews die in Europe. And you know what? Today in America, every major Jewish organization, but one, the ZOA, the Zionist Organization, is the only exception. They're all run by the Council on Foreign Relations. All of them. They're run by Zuckerman, CFR. They're run by Bronfman, CFR. They're run by Siegman, CFR. Every major Jewish organization. Matt Henlon, CFR. There isn't one that isn't run by the CFR. And do you know what that means? That means the entire Jewish media is run by the CFR. And the CFR, people like Daniel Abraham, Stephen Cohen, who actually talk about Israel, they are on CNN. I saw Stephen Cohen on CNN yesterday. The guy, this Stephen Cohen, was Yossi Beilin's partner in the Geneva Initiative.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and before we go on, I want Barry to get out his telephone number and his email again, because if you would like to have Barry come and talk about the murder of Rabin, if you'd like him to talk about what's going on, he's got a number of talks he can give, and of course, if you have a group and you would like to have him come, anyway, why don't you get your information out, Barry?
Yeah, please. If not, I go back to Israel where they will kill me. And by the way, I'm not being dramatic. I almost died in the last 4 months, which led me strangely to Tulsa, Oklahoma. Not a bad place. 918-482-2333. 918-482-2333. I gave the talk in Salt Lake City 2 days ago. It was extremely successful. It always is. And my email is Chamish, C-H-A-M-I-S-H, at NetVision, one word, N-E-T-V-I-S-I-O-N.net, N-E-T.I-L, Chamish at NetVision.net.il. Now back to the CFR and Stephen Cohen.
But one more thing before we do. Barry, do you have copies of your videos, your book? Can people get them by contacting you?
Yes, I will send them out to anyone who wants them. Little by little, they've been mailed from Israel to here. And I've got my latest book on the Sabbatean, Shabtai Tzvi, Labor Zionism and the Holocaust. I'll send it to whoever wants it.
All right, fine. Well, right now, go ahead. You tell what you want to, and then we've got Will in Missouri has a brief question. But you go ahead and get the rest of the story.
Stephen Cohen is on TV. The Ginasar scandal. That's what I spoke about. It murdered a Utah congressman. His name was Wayne Owens. He was found dead on Tel Aviv's beach on December 18th of 2002. The hit squad run by Peres knocked him off, and I had an audience, only 100, but it was a good 100 people who know my work. in Salt Lake City, and I got news for you. They knew I was right.
Of course, he was actually from their area, wasn't he?
He was their congressman.
Right.
And he was knocked off by this Paris hit squad. You get anywhere near Paris, let me tell you something, you watch your back, and even that won't help you. He knocked off Wayne Owens the same way he's knocking off the citizens of Haifa and Tiberias and all of Israel today. It's that same monster, Shimon Peres.
All right, fine. Well, let's go to Will, who's calling from Missouri. And if you're out there, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Will, did you have a question for our guest?
Yes, Dr. Stanton, thank you for taking my call. Just a quick question. I've gotten Barry's book, and I've read it, and I really appreciate it, Barry. But there's a question that I've always wanted to have answered by you. What is the relationship between Shabtai Zvi, Jakob Frank, and the group now that is known as the Frankists?
All the same. Jakob Frank was about 1785 was when he made the deal with Adam Weishaupt of the Illuminati at the home of Meyer Amschel Rothschild. That's when the Sabbateans really took off. They're all the same people. Jakob Frank thought he was the Messiah, the second Messiah after Shabtai Zvi. The Frankists and the Sabbateans are absolutely the same. The one difference is, in Turkey, they're all Sabbateans. There's no Frankists. The Frankists are the European Sabbateans. I think that's about as good a definition as I can give.
And is that is the seven families then the Habsburg dynasty and their kin?
No, no. It's the Lazard brothers. It's the Solomon. This was only 2 days ago. It was told to me. It's the Warburgs. It's the Rockefellers. Solomon brothers. They were given to me just by the actual relative of Rothschild. It's not the Habsburgs. These are largely Sabbatean. These are largely Sabbateans.
Thank you very much.
Jews who aren't Jews anymore. You know, the agents of Rothschild, like John Jacob Astor, they're not Jews anymore. They came in the 1850s. They did a lot of damage during the American Civil War. They put a guy named Benjamin Rubin as the Minister of Finance of the American South. They fed both sides. They were Jewish when they arrived in America. Today, none of them are Jews. They're all Sabbateans. They've intermarried. And by the way, Gore's daughter is married to a grandson of John Jacob Astor.
It's a small world. Anyway, anything else, Will?
No, thank you so much.
And did you enjoy Barry's book?
Barry's book is a must-have. I would recommend it to anyone. It's not a hard read. It's not a long read, but it's extremely valuable information and has excellent references.
All right, well,
thank you. That was great.
Okay, fine. Well, I appreciate your support there, Will. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, fine. Our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And there is this other group, and of course there's so many groups out there, but this is a very important group. It's the Sabbateans, and of course you can look them up in the encyclopedia, and they really were a group of their very a forceful group, and apparently Rabbi Antleman has written extensively about this, hasn't he, in the past?
He has two books. To Eliminate the Opiate came out in 1974. For 30 plus years he's been mocked over that book. He's now 77 years old. He's a very wise 77-year-old and a very youthful one. 30 years, nobody believed him. He put out his second version to Eliminate the Opiate, Part 2. This came out about 5 years ago, and more and more people started to believe him. By the way, I'm not an original thinker. I take the thoughts of original thinkers, and I just kind of write modern. I write for the layman, and they didn't. They wrote very scholarly works that are extremely difficult to understand. I make it understandable.
All right, fine. So I think that's important. Well, we've got Ray calling here, and Ray's calling from Santa Cruz. So, hi, Ray. Did you have a question for our guest?
Yeah. Before World War II, weren't Jews tried to get over to America, and they were sent back?
Yeah.
Was our government complicit in that whole thing?
Was. Your government was incredibly complicit.
As was the British government as well.
I see. And it was worldwide. It was the Panamanian government. It was the Cuban government. It was the Canadian government. There was a worldwide diplomatic order. Any Jew who tried to escape from Germany and didn't go to Palestine was sent back to Germany to die. It was that simple. There was going to be no more funny stuff. You either went to Palestine or you died.
And then, of course, after the war, why, of course, you know, the Jews wanted to get out of Europe, and where could they go? And, of course, they were welcomed into Palestine, and so that's how you got the country established.
All right, I'm going to give you another thing this relative of Evelyn Rothschild told me. He said one of the biggest mistakes they made, Hitler went crazy on them. He said he just abandoned them and went absolutely nuts on them. The anti-Semitism that he was supposed to promote, and which they paid for, and he told me, he said, they paid for Hitler. We're supposed to scare the Jews all the way to Palestine. He said they were going to die, there was going to be pogroms, but there were going to be a couple of million strong, able, young Jews who were going to create this Sabbatean state, and Hitler went nuts and killed them all. But he said that was the biggest mistake they ever made. He said the Rothschilds lost their properties in France. They lost valuables all over the place where they weren't supposed to be touched. Funny enough, he told me that as well.
Anything else?
Wasn't Prescott Bush Hitler's angel? Wasn't he involved in
Lord, the number one
IG Farben? And didn't he finance the Nazis?
Number one donor. What was his company? My goodness. He worked in Boston, I'm kicking it. He was the number one single donor to Adolf Hitler. But don't forget something. He was working big time for the Skull and Bones. It's a daughter company of the Council on Foreign Relations.
You know, speaking of Brown Brothers Harriman. Brown Brothers Harriman.
A link in the chain, right, with the Council on Foreign Relations and the whole relationship with the Skull and Bones and why George Jr. is in the office that he is right now.
Exactly.
You know, and of course we know his father has great influence and,
exactly.
Why would an idiot like that be,
because he's a useful idiot.
Yeah.
What people in this country just don't understand is the Council on Foreign Relations, with its 4,200 members, determines your diplomacy and kills your sons. Your sons are dying in Iraq for this stupid little think tank in the middle of Manhattan. It's an atrocity, but that is what is happening.
Yeah.
Okay, anything else, Ray?
Well, I believe everything you're saying. You just kind of clarified a few things.
Well, you just keep listening. I appreciate
that happened.
I appreciate your call, Ray.
We'll see you, bye.
Now let's go to Bob, who's calling us from St. Louis. And once again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Bob, did you have a question?
Yeah, a couple things. In terms of a question, I was wondering if he knows of anything of a oil line going from Iraq to Israel.
Now, do you know anything about this oil line going from Iraq to Israel?
Sure. It goes to... it passes through the Golan Heights and ends up in Haifa. This is one of the reasons, I think anyways, that the Syrians want the Golan Heights back. This pipeline that passes through their territory, and it's going to be worth a lot of money someday.
Is it carrying oil yet, or is it just in the process?
Oh, no, it's empty. It's empty. It was shut down after the 6-7 war.
Okay. Anything else about
it? Well, look, just what we're talking about right here. When I think of the last elections, if you look on the Democratic side, I don't know if you know who was running at that time, if you can enumerate them, because I don't know if there's anybody that was non-Jewish or partially Jewish on the Democratic side. And if you think about the Republican side, I'm sure you know that, and so that means they come from both Jewish backgrounds. Was there anybody in the presidential election that was not Jewish in some respect or form?
But Bob, I think you have to, don't confuse Jewish with Sabbatean.
I just came in on you guys. I don't
right,
think
that's
Sabbatean.
Again, at last election, and by the way, the pipeline, it was flowing to Sidon or Tyre in Lebanon. But it's a minor point, it really is. Last election, of course, John Kerry discovers he's a Jew.
Right.
And he had to, he acted so shocked. My father was a Jew.
Right.
You know, he acted so shocked, like he didn't know he knew. The election before, of course, was Joe Lieberman, who, of the Council on Foreign Relations. Let's not fool around. They're all from the Council on Foreign Relations. Again, what this Rockefeller also told me is that, I'm sorry, Rothschild grandson also told me, he said the Rockefellers initially were Jewish. You may not know, but when they first came to America, they were Dutch Jews. I never heard that before, but that's what he told me. So you got Nelson Rockefeller, you have Sabbateans, you have only one, Joe Lieberman, actually professed to be a Jew. All the rest professed to be Christians and were found out one way or another.
Well, you know, just one last comment on this whole thing. You know, we know the Jewish people were in front of civil rights and all that stuff, equality and all this other, it turns out now to be BS, because if they were really that diligent about equal rights and stuff like that, you can look at the people in politics, you can look at the people who are running for president, you can look at the people who are running our country right now, and there's not a peep about it out of the whole Jewish community.
Well, they're not Jewish.
I know, but if you look at the names on there,
you can't call them Jewish.
Jewish.
They're Christians.
Okay, I went to school with all Jewish people, okay? And I can look at the names of the people. I'm, you know, believe me, one of my oldest friends was Jewish since I've been 4 years old. If I look at that, if I look at the people on there, I would classify them as Jewish as compared to their... from their last names. Believe me, I went to school with them my whole life. And that's very disconcerting to me, because the people who were the loudest yellers in this country, the people who originated the civil rights and all that, were Jewish people.
Yes,
okay?
But
you can interchange that. You could say that I'm not Jewish because I don't practice Judaism, but you could say that. And we know about Khazars and stuff like that, too, okay?
You're mixing up real Jews.
Say what?
I mean, you're making a mistake here. Hello?
Oh, I'm not making a mistake. I realize that, but I'm just saying, according to the ostensibly, what is manifested to most people, and a person who could see the last name of what a Jewish person is. I realize there's Khazars, and they have no, me being a Christian, I could be Irish, and I really have more Jewish blood in me than someone who's a Khazar. You know, that's just a, that's all
I don't know what Caesar
right
is. I think it's Caesar in several languages. But look, this is silly. You're taking real Jews and comparing them to people who are not real Jews. They've been intermarried for generations.
Right.
We're not talking the same people. Now, when you talk about the leadership of Israel, Shimon Peres, all of Israel, believes his mother was not Jewish. The same with Sharon. When you have to understand that Israel's leadership despised the Jewish religion. They, and as for Olmert putting on the kippah and reciting from the book of Jeremiah, that was a bunch of baloney.
Anyway, I think, Bob, the important thing to understand is there are these satanic organizations, and they are in every religious group in America.
Oh,
they're,
I realize
they're in the
that.
Catholic, they're in the Protestant,
sure.
They are within the Jewish, and we have to understand we're facing a satanic movement, and there's subdivisions in every religious group as well. So, anyway, thanks so much for your call.
Okay.
And let us not forget, in 1880, 80% of the Jews who have disappeared since 1880 disappeared through the Holocaust, through pogroms, and through assimilation. These Sabbateans have utterly destroyed the Jewish religion. This Reform Judaism, this conservative Judaism that you have in the United States, it's not Judaism. These are movements that were founded in Germany. They went to England and then to America. They are meant to dilute Judaism and make it disappear. And let me tell you, it's done a fine job.
Well, we've got real problems, but I'm sure that there will always be some people who keep the faith, the Jewish faith, just as we hope that there will be people. We know the people who keep our faith as well. But I think all the religions are under attack today, because I believe there are people out there who hate the God of the Bible.
Oh, incidentally, the attack on Israel... don't forget, when you wipe out Israel, when you wipe out the Jewish people, that is the best thing you could do if you're fighting God.
Well, I tell you, they're never going to wipe out the Jewish people. They're never going to wipe out all the Christians. They may wipe out a lot of them, but there will always be a Jewish remnant.
Half
there will always be a Christian
Jews
remnant
of the world. Half now live in Israel. Okay, behind that wall that they put up in Israel are half the Jews of the world right now. That wall is not to keep Arabs out of Israel; it's to keep the Jews in. We've got the Warsaw Ghetto in Israel right now. That's what we've got. We've got 1940 Europe. We've got the Jews behind the wall right now. And let me tell you, there's a lot of bombs being dropped inside that wall at this moment.
And I'm sure there are. Let's get your telephone number and your website up one more time, Barry.
Okay, I'm Chamish, Chamish, at netvision.net.il. My website is barrychamish.com. Now watch out. There are horrible, horrible websites that paint me as a neo-Nazi, a UFO buff. It doesn't matter what they are, they're fake. Watch out for the fake websites. That is being put up by a CFR stooge, a person associated with one Daniel Pipes. And also, watch out for Daniel Pipes of the CFR. His sole reason for being is to get Americans to hate Arabs. That's all he exists for.
Hold that. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up tonight's program. All right, Dr. Stan, and go ahead. You got 3 minutes to finish the program, Barry.
Look, about this last thing, I'm under attack from many, many different forces. One, there's a loony professor in Haifa who's on the board of a CFR magazine, and I assume he's taking money for this, puts up all kinds of phony stuff about me, and I can't take it down. I keep writing the companies, can't do anything about it. There's a war against me being fought from Israel. Somebody decided, let's say 4 months ago, that they weren't getting the results they wanted to. People were taking me seriously. Then they started to knock me down. The car crash, I can't even get my insurance company or my lawyer to look at the car. The police won't allow it. Somebody tried to knock me out and kill me. I died 3 times in the hospital. I was revived. These Sabbateans have killed my friends. They killed my closest journalist friend, Adir Zeke. They tried to knock off my friend Joel Bainerman. I didn't realize how serious this is. I was a victim of some sort of hit squad. I'm in America. I'm doing my best to stay here. It's not easy. I don't have a medical program. Your medical is ridiculously expensive, and all this. But I need work. If you want me to speak, you write me and you phone me. I will come to you for free of charge. Just pay the transportation, and I'll try and sell some books with your people. That's all I can say. That's what I'm doing right now.
Well, Barry, I appreciate all that you're doing. I appreciate that you are available to come on with us and keep us abreast of what's going on over there, because it's so difficult for the American people to imagine what's going on over there, and people tend to choose up one side or the other without realizing that everybody's being manipulated. But of course, my fear is that, you know, this is going to lead to some dramatic and very dangerous times in the Middle East for the Jewish people. And I believe that there really is an effort to try to destroy the Jewish people.
The Jewish people, in other words, by the leaders of Israel, they do not care if that country survives or not. This is not understood. It's not a war for survival. It's a war for the New World Order. People have got to understand that Israel is being used by the New World Order for very nefarious purposes. But do not make the mistake of thinking Hezbollah and Hamas are good guys. They're today's Nazis.
And in fact, there are no good guys over there. But there are a lot of innocent people. There are a lot of good people, both Arab and Israeli. And
all
not a lot are going to die.
All the Israelis, except a few thousand Sabbateans running the place, are good people. And there's no question about it that we are being manipulated to kill each other. And I don't know if anyone can stop it. These people are so rotten.
God bless. We're out of time. Good night. God bless.
See you later. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and of course, Barry Chamish is certainly always an exciting guest to have on, because he feels so deeply about what's happening to the Jewish people, and he feels they're being betrayed by their leaders, and I agree with him totally. But I believe, of course, there is this satanic element working within the Jewish faith, within the Christian faith, within the certainly with even within the Muslim faith today, certainly within the Catholic faith, these forces are there, and they're intent upon the destruction of humankind. If you read the Revelation 6:8, you'll find that they, and I look, and behold, a pale horse, and the rider upon him is death, and power was given unto them to kill a quarter of the population of the world with the sword, and with famine, and with pestilence. And of course the reference is, and Hades followed close behind. We're moving into very, very difficult times. Whether it's going to be now or 6 months from now or a year from now, I have no way of knowing. But if you believe in the scriptures, you know very well that God brings judgment upon countries that have turned against him. God's plan will be carried out. And of course, so much of this is happening in the Middle East. The Middle East today is more the center of a focus of people's attention than at any time in a good long while. Isn't it amazing that that one area of the country, that one area of the world gets so much attention? Well, I believe God does have a plan. It's going to be fascinating as we see it unfold. And if you don't have a personal relationship with our Lord, why, we hope that many of you will just give us a call. We'll be glad to talk to you about how you can have that assurance, because you're going to need God's protection for yourself and your family in the difficult times that lie ahead. Now remember, Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. We do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, we'd be glad to send one. If you'd like to know, of course, about this world satanic movement, you need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and then you can get the video, The Secrets, The Secrets of the Illuminati, which is, of course, a DVD or video. I guess it's a video we did for the Prophecy Club. Or you can get my Brotherhood of Darkness in DVD or VHS. We have certainly our pamphlets on the occult hierarchy that run the world, taken from their writing. Their pamphlets are really collections of my newsletters. You can go up on the website of RadioLiberty.com and pull them down, but certainly we make them available in the inexpensive pamphlets, and I will tell you that I keep them close to me as a source of constant reference so that we can have this information at our fingertips. If people don't understand the enemy, that there is another dimension out there, they can't possibly stand up against it. You need to get, of course, our 4-tape set on the supernatural. You need to get the book, The Beautiful Side of Evil, by Johanna Michelson, who was a medium. She was actually involved with a faith healer, a psychic surgeon, and she saw wonderful and miraculous things occurring. But, of course, they were all reflections of the other dimension. And you can tap into that, but you do so at the risk of your very soul. There really are satanic movements. We have 4-tape sets on Satanism. We have the wonderful videos. If you haven't yet seen them, you should. They're entitled, They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. The 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 7-hour versions. And you need to see that to understand the music that's come into the Christian church today. We have the videos put out by our good friend Chris Pinto. Megiddo 1 and Megiddo 2, separate ones, but each one has an important story to tell about the spiritual battle. I happen to have a small part in the second one. The award-winning video, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, a must-see to actually understand what's going on today. That's The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. And then, of course, we hope that many of you will go to our website at RadioLiberty.com, where you can hear our programs on the Internet directly or indirectly 5 hours a day. You can get our shortwave programs. We're on Telstar 5, 9 hours a day. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.